Hello all. Welcome to the final episode for 2024 of All Out for No Loss. This is Vasant and I have with me Anand Kumar Shankaran and Ramakrishnan G. Iyer. In this episode, we are going to be talking about the Boxing Day test played at the MCG, what happened there and how Australia steadily and surely took over and went on to take a 2-1 lead in the series.
Yeah, thanks Vasant. A couple of things before we get into the details of what happened, how we could have saved the test and so on. A couple of statistics and numbers that in my mind sets the framework for how the test panned out. There were 520 instances of first inning scores of over 450. The team that scored over 274 times. There were 228 draws, 17 losses, most recently by Pakistan against England this year, and two ties. That includes the Chennai tie. So bottom line, when you give away over 450 runs in the first innings, draw is the preferable outcome, right? Unless you play out of your skin, the percentage of the team batting second winning is very, very low. The minute you concede over 450 runs, you're starting off with a huge handicap. That's the first set of numbers that we should think about. The second set of numbers is between 2018 and 2022, India played four quicks in 14 tests. In those 14 tests, we won six and we lost seven and we drew one. In the same period, between 2018 and 2022, we played three quicks in 18 tests. We won five and lost 10 of these 18 tests. So the template that was set by Shastri and Virat, and to a certain extent followed by Dravid, was to always bowl four quicks. The minute we stray away from that, we struggle. In my mind, these two statistics feed onto each other. That, I think, is where we start. But I want to hear from all of you before we go into the details.
Totally. This was going to be one of the talking points around team balance, right? Without getting specifically into the play-by-play detail, let's just look at squad construction for a second. They dropped Gill and they played Washington. That was the sole change that they made from the prior test. They stuck to this so-called template, the Gautam Gambhir template of playing only three fast bowlers. And I guess the argument was, well, if the Australians could make do with three fast bowlers, why can't we? I think the difference that Gautam Gambhir has failed to spot was the fact that we don't have three awesome fast bowlers as good as Pat Cummins, Josh Hazlewood, and Mitchell Starc. Mitchell Starc, I mean, we were chatting about it in the morning, has 373 wickets at an average of 27. And he is the so-called weak link in this Australian bowling attack, right? Whereas we have two Tyros, and we have one seriously world-class bowler in Bumrah. So yes, certainly, Anand, I think we have paid the price for walking away from that template of playing for fast bowlers, particularly in these kinds of Australian pitches. And I say this despite what happened at Perth, where we thought Nitesh Reddy was going to be that fourth fast bowler. We quickly caught on to the fact that he is not that guy. He should just simply play as a specialist batter. So I think that is thing one that we should talk about. And then, of course, a couple of other things, right? Loading the team with all-rounders as opposed to specialists. What is Sundar in our heads? We still don't know. On the one hand, he averages 48 with a bat, probably a little more now for all we know. But the fact of the matter is, what kind of role clarity was provided to him? Hey, you bat in the top order and it's your job to make big hundreds. Is that the discussion? Or is that, hey, you get a bat at eight, at best, you can kind of run with the tail a little bit, try and protect them and try and maximize the score. In what capacity are we putting Washington Sundar to use? I think that's an area of confusion. I do agree that the larger point around who are the 11 players? What is the construction of the squad? What is the balance of the squad? Is a question mark. And then who does what? You know, now that the 11 have been decided, what sort of role clarity was provided to each player is also a question mark in my mind.
Washi is averaging 49.11. Basically, okay. 14 innings, 442 runs, a lot of not outs in that.
Vasan, go ahead.
I hear this discussion about the template of four quicks. But let's go back to 2020 at the same MCG. We played three quicks and two spinners. We played Bumrah, we played Siraj, and we played Umesh Yadav. And we're talking about a Siraj who I suspect it was his debut. And then we also had two spinners who were probably at the peak of their abilities. Ashwin and Jadeja. The problem that I saw in this game and the previous game is we don't have four bowlers. For that matter, three bowlers. Why? Even two bowlers. Even the second bowler, be it Akashdeep at times or Siraj at times, we were operating with one bowler through and through. And had he got even a little bit of support, someone like Umesh Yadav, Shami from the previous year, this whole series would have been very different. The fact remains that Australia has simply not been able to play Bumrah at all. Some of the spells that he bowled both in the first and the second innings left them in awe, to the point of Kerry O'Keefe saying that we should record the two spells of the second innings and use them as training videos for all upcoming fast bowlers. He was that good. The problem here is that we were operating with one bowler. Ashwin is not there. Not that he would have made a big difference because he was also on the wane. Jadeja is not the bowler he was in Sena conditions.
Also on the wane, yeah.
Washington Sundar didn't have any penetration. Not that he bowled much either. Siraj was all over the map. Levels of consistency were very low. And whenever he was consistent, the bowling attack looked absolutely lethal because there was pressure from both sides. So when the team left the shores of India, it was very clear that we had a very thin second line of fast bowlers because Siraj had a poor run-up to the series. So we were going in with a little bit of a popgun attack. And then when your batting doesn't score anything, the load on the bowling attack is much higher. In fact, if the batting is able to score 300s and 400s regularly, the bowlers have some play. They can be a little better. Nobody's going to complain about the occasional four ball because we have 350 runs in the kitty. But it has not happened. So not only do we have a small or a very thin bowling attack, our batters not scoring runs made things just absolutely worse. And this has been going on through the series. I thought we were super lucky to get away in Perth in spite of being rolled for 150 because Bumrah was brilliant and Harshit Rana and Siraj were able to bowl little bits and pieces here and there to pick up wickets and keep us in the game. The other thing that changed in Melbourne, which we have to recognize, is the Australian batters have improved. They were very poor in Perth. They were a little better in Adelaide. Travis Head was carrying them all the time. And then just like that, Smith comes into form, 200s. We had Marnus hitting 250s. In the middle, Khawaja managed to get a 50. So what is happening here is that very weak and suspect Australian batting lineup has started scoring. So that's added another degree of difficulty that our team is just unable to unlock. So this is a combination of things going on. Let's be honest. We won the first game. We were thrashed in the second. We were behind the eight ball in the third almost all the time. And even in the fourth, the best we could have done is drawn the game. At no point of time, most of the time, 90% of the time, we were not threatening. There was this small phase in the second innings of Australia wherein we actually came back and could have threatened taking, resting the initiative in the game away. But that was it.
Yes, exactly. I think that, yeah. So let's drill into that a little bit. Starting the game, Australia scored 475, brutal assault from a 19-year-old kid. You know, who seems to be operating more with his lip than with his bat? That's a separate topic for a separate...
Yeah, let me add one thing. He has a known weakness. In the first match of the Uni World Cup in 2024 in South Africa against Namibia, people figured out that if you bowl the ball and bring it in, this guy cannot play. And throughout that tournament, they kept on rearranging his furniture. He was not scoring anything. And he changed his guard. He changed the way he was playing. He changed a whole bunch of things. Even in the final, he was cleaned up for a duck by Ram Limbani, who bowls 120 at best. This is known to everyone. And I do not understand what our bowlers are doing on the first day, giving this guy width outside the off stump and taking the ball out. It took 17 balls for Jasprit Bumrah to bring the ball in. And guess what? After the first innings, they went, did their homework. And then he couldn't put bat on ball in the second innings.
I think they've figured him out. Now he needs to come back with another plan. But the thing is, you know, it was a calculated move. You know, McSweeney, who frankly didn't do anything wrong, was dropped in favor of Constance. I guess he was given instructions by George Bailey and Pat Cummins, just go out there and quote-unquote express himself. He did that. you know, scores a runner ball 60-ish. I think he did that really well. And that is what built up to the point Anand was making a little earlier. And at this point, we are like literally staring at a 300-plus score, except it went on to become a 400-plus score because 300 for six went on to become 475, which is yet another topic of discussion. Each time they get to six wickets for a little, how is it that they end up getting to a lot by the time the innings gets over? In both innings, right? 91 for 6, 8 for possibly 7, except that catch was dropped. And then before you know it, 330-ish. Anyway, Anand, you were saying.
Yeah, Vasant, I have a question for you. The reason, is it that our bowling cupboard is bare? Or is it that we are trying to accommodate our lack of batting with bits and pieces players that we are leaving out players on the bench? Which of these two?
A combination of both. Our bowling, fast bowling cupboard is definitely bare. We've got this group on tour, Bumrah, a relatively raw Ashdeep. We have Siraj, who is misfiring all the time. Who's on the sidelines? Prasidh Krishna, who's largely been injured most of his career. And who's in the waiting list? Mukesh, who doesn't bowl very quick. We've got Ashdeep, who doesn't play red ball cricket as much. We've got a whole bunch of guys from the U19 setup who never evolved. We've got Mayank and Umran, who between being all over the place and injuring themselves, they have not evolved either. We have a setup where Khalil Ahmed is still considered a good enough player to play for the team. So we have a serious problem because these guys have not grown. It is not replacing Bumrah. Nobody replaced Umesh Yadav. Nobody replaced Ishan Sharma. When Kohli was running the show in 2021, it was a relentless Ishan Sharma. They couldn't get the ball off the square. Umesh Yadav was very, very tough because he kept the stumps in play all the time. We had Mohammad Shami, who could do a lot of things, and Jasprit Bumrah. Now, that is a bowling attack with four bowlers. And in fact, if you go and look at the strike rates of Umesh, Shami and Bumrah and the strike rate of Ishan Sharma version 2.0, this was an absolutely brilliant attack, which also meant that it was okay if you played a batter less. Because we have these four guys who are going to get people out. The opposition is not going to score that much. And you have Jadeja, who was essentially playing a holding role. So it was fine. So we never really needed an extra batter. We played in Sena. And when we played in India, of course, Jadeja, Aksar and Ashwin at 7, 8, 9 was a brilliant combination. And what has happened in this tour is I think the team management has very little confidence in this current bowling attack, which meant the model was we outbat them. If they score 400, we will score 401, which is why the overload of batters. The problem, even the existing bowling crew is not able to measure up. And there you go. Even if Hardik Pandya was available, this whole thing would be different because he would have been a really valid threat. Both in Brisbane and in Adelaide, he would have been very difficult to deal with.
Absolutely. Let's touch upon a couple of other topics for the Boxing Day test. I think the Indian win was likely taken out of the picture, possibly by the end of the first innings. The fact that we got ourselves a Nitish Reddy 100 is really what helped plug the gap. Otherwise, it was going to be a huge first innings lead conceded. You were referring to this one point, India, perhaps the upper hand at 91 for 6. And that if that had become 95 for 7 and had gone on to, I don't know, 120 all out or 130 all out, then India was chasing 220, 230. And they were likely to be in the game. But that, unfortunately, was not to be. But beyond that, though, there might be a school of thought here that could say that, oh, the game was competitive. It's probably not that. I mean, it's, you know, technically, two of those four results were taken out of the picture long back. I think that probably explains the reason why Cummins simply chose not to declare on day four and make the Indians bat for like five overs or whatever, because he still likely felt that they were in the realm of achieving something with the bat in the fourth innings. So he just wanted to take the Indian win out of the equation completely. And then, of course, he felt 90 overs were more than enough. 79, as it turned out, finally, for them to get to those 10 wickets. Let's talk about that last day, the three sessions. The third session where we lost Rohit Sharma and Virat Kohli. The second session where we did not lose anyone. And the third session where we lost seven.
The third session collapse, that's what India used to do to visiting teams in buns and burners. So being on the receiving end was very hard to see. And I mean, 46 all out was not that far ago, I suppose. But both 46 all out and the Adelaide 36-9 were both seeming track. Somehow this was a little bit more jarring. I know that Pant is getting a lot of flack. And I did think that the Australians had shut up shop. They were moving on to saving over rates and bowling head and Labuschagne, yes, and all of that stuff. And I really hope Pant learns from this. He is getting a lot of flack, rightfully so. I don't know which one is worse, the first innings hike or the second innings, but I think the second innings, the first innings, you know, Reddy covered him up. The second innings, he couldn't. So we are left with that. Australia, the fact that there was a passage of time where they appeared to be struggling at 91 for 6 was primarily due to Bumrah, notwithstanding all the catches we had dropped before and then we would drop later. The one thing that was very clear going into this test is ever since the redesign of the Kookaburra ball, it does a little bit more. The seam is more pronounced. It does a little bit more in the first 40 overs and it does a lot less in the remaining 40 overs. It's not reversing at all. So that is one of the reasons why Stark is not the bowler we think he is with the pink ball. But before the Kookaburra ball redesign, Stark used to get a lot of reverse, right? He's by far one of the top one or two one-day international bowlers. Even with the white ball, he's able to get reverse. With the redesigned Kookaburra ball, he's not getting any reverse in the later stages of the innings. And Cummins has enough tricks up his sleeve to sort out. Josh Hazlewood is a monotonic robot who can hit the length repeatedly and get wickets. But what these tests showed, and which Pat Cummins, I think in the second test or the third test, in one of the presses, he also acknowledged that nobody is scoring runs in the first 30 overs in the top order in Australia. And this is not just limited to tests. It's being seen within the Sheffield Shield as well. And in combination to all of this, the pitches are aiding less and less spin in Australia. So there's a lot going on with the ball, with everything. So if all we had to do was, and it was like proven by Boland and Lyon in the second innings and by Cummins in the first and the second innings, right? Just about anybody who batted over the 40th over scored a lot of runs. And even when you got the second new ball, even with Australia, when they got the second new ball against Reddy, everyone was wiped out. Like all the four bowlers were wiped out. And what can you do? We saw that with Bumrah as well in the third innings where he was wiped out. At one point, I saw the clipping where Rohit is like cajoling him to bowl one extra over and Bumrah saying, no, he can't do it anymore. He had bowled 9 spells, right? So we had done all that hard work. Pant had shown restraint till then. I was kind of funny to in the second session to see Pant as the elder statesman trying to ground Jaiswal. And I was like, aha, like, have we turned a corner here? And then unfortunately for us, tea happened. Yeah, I was a complete brain fade shot. What I didn't expect was the collapse, particularly given the fact that just in the second innings, our lower order had done fantastically well. Jadeja got the extra bounce that Boland apparently does repeatedly. I remember his 6-for-7 against England in the last Ashes. Yeah. He did exactly that. And that's what he's a specialist at. This was a test that we should have saved. Going into the last session, we could have easily saved this test. I think as fans of Indian cricket, this loss is going to annoy us a lot more than the Adelaide 21-36-9 or the Bangalore 46 all out. I think this hurts a lot more to me.
Kankar, this one hurts far more. It's very seldom that after a match, I'm not even willing to discuss it. I just shut up shop and then I said, I'm going to go to sleep. It was difficult. I mean, even the World Cup loss was harsh, but it was a stranglehold that they maintained through and through. So there was no wiggle room. In this one, this game was very drawable. But fundamentally, I mean, if you just step back, they didn't make mistakes. Very few of them, if at all. Our guys were bad. I mean, the number of catch drops, the somewhat slovenly fielding, the mistakes with the ball, and you can't do it. You can't do it at this level. If you keep on doing it, you will lose. Now, we all talk about Jaiswal, we all talk about those three catches being dropped. And of course, this is sports and sometimes you pick catches, sometimes you drop them. Nobody does it by purpose. But the one that really got to me most was that last drop when he was at point or silly point and the ball was played into his hands and he dropped it. Just the ball before, Pant had told him, stay low, stay low. And there is footage in the last test, or was it in the previous innings, probably last test, when Rohit Sharma really scolded him, saying, stay low, this is not gully cricket. The problem I have with that is not listening, not being in the game, just letting your concentration go away. Elite sports is all about being on the ball all the time. You don't go for a snooze in the middle. Chasing 230 is very different mentally than having to chase 340 on the last day. Yeah. Pressure would have been squarely on the Australians. Trying. Instead, with 340 and a whole day, Cummins pretty much shut out the opportunities for India to win, which allowed him to put enough fielders around the ring to put pressure.
How big a deal is that whole Snickergate thing for you all?
Let me go back to the first test. There was a failure. Rahul was given out. Right. Then there was another Snicker failure. Someone else.
The Mitch Marsh dismissal. Don't forget.
The Mitch Marsh dismissal in Adelaide was a Snicker failure. The Snicker has just not been working in this series.
Exactly.
These guys at Channel 7, whoever is the broadcaster is, are useless. Who cares about a halo camera and this and that and all that nonsense when you can't get the technology for a playing condition
like
working?
Snicker to work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Somebody should pay attention and give them one shellacking, because that is impacting the game. Who cares if you have this halo camera or whatever nonsense that they're using? No. That makes things much more difficult for the umpires and raises a lot of questions. Now, if you ask me, the two dismissals that the Indian supporters are upset about, namely that of Jaiswal and that of Deep, Akash, I think are non-issues. In both cases, the batters were out.
Yeah, pretty much.
But then again, the Snicker brought in the issues. Anand?
Yeah, actually more than the Snicker, which I think, you know, we were just, it's just politics. I think those two were out. There were two LBWs. The one that Labuschagne survived, which was an umpire's call, and the one that Jaiswal survived, which was another umpire's call, you know, which seemed even more ghastly. But my understanding of the umpire's call is, based on a discussion that Jared Kimber had with Karthikeya Date, the fault is in the TV replays and the TV projections of what happened, right? Karthikeya's take on that is the software is pretty much telling, I can't guess if it is going to hit the stumps or not, so I'm going to leave it to the umpire. But when they project it on television to show the projected trajectory of the ball, that's when there is a bug, or that's when...
It looks very appealing and convincing.
It's very appealing and convincing, but in both the cases, even more with the Jaiswal case, where the replay actually showed the ball hitting the stump and clipping the bail. And the sad part is, all the commentators who should know better, I'm pretty sure they know better, they know fully well how the umpire's call works and should be able to explain it, don't. They all, you know, make mockery of it, and that leaves a bad taste. But it happened to both the teams, happened with Labuschagne early on. I think it was in his 30s, after the drop, pretty much. The technology seems to be going backward. I don't know what's going on. So the problem is, if it is so visual, people are going to lose trust in it, and they're going to, you know, they're going to ask for drastic changes. That's the thing. But we should talk about Labuschagne and how lucky he is. Like, Bumrah did say that. The third innings, was it like at the first spell, was it like a third of the ball, fall shots, Usman, yes, and Labuschagne?
Percent, yeah.
They had like no clue. How does someone survive that? How does Labuschagne survive that? And I don't know, somebody told me, it's Alisa Healy who said that. Basically, Labuschagne is good at one thing, which is not getting out. And that's all he did. He did not get out. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny. Labuschagne is a good example, right? At the end, the commentary in the Aussie media after that first test was, Labuschagne should be dropped straight away and he should be nowhere close to the test team. But then he's picked up the pace. He started making runs and he's done what Alisa Healy has described him to be. Like, he's figured out a way to just stay at the crease and make a few runs.
At the end of the day, there was no howler per se. And we all know what Joel Wilson does. and the Australians have been hurt more by Joel Wilson than anybody else. He might be for Australia what Steve Buckner is to India. But all that said, I don't think there is any point in making a big brouhaha about this. These are straightforward decisions. The team that played better won. The team that made less mistakes won. The team that did not have depth lost. It's as simple as that.
That's cricket.
When one team cannot put together enough runs in the first innings, and only two times in the last nine tests have they crossed 300, and that has been thanks to their number 8 and number 9, you have no business winning anything.
So, which brings me to this, the big question. The Rocco conundrum. Do we expect to see Rocco continue with their merry ways at the Sydney Cricket Ground?
If this test had ended in a draw, we haven't talked about the one innings that we would have spent the previous 30 minutes talking about, which is Reddy's century. Let's talk about that before we go to Rocco. It was a fantastic century. I mean, he was an absolute control, you know, well-deserved. And thankfully, Siraj batted and Washington did whatever was expected out of him. Hopefully, we'll see Reddy in the top 6. And that kind of answers your Rocco question.
He was very, very good with the bat. I think we should spend a second praising the kid. He's just 22 years old. When he played the Perth test, he was seen as a bowling all-rounder. He was going to be providing us with that, the fourth pace bowling option at that point. Except, you know, it turns out that he's a far better batter than he's a bowler. He averages 49 with a ball and with the bat after 4 tests. Lovely innings. Particularly the way he was leaving the ball. My goodness. You know, Virat Kohli should watch that recording. Like, that sort of thing. His mental model was so sorted. He knew which balls to hit. He knew which balls to leave. I thought he was brilliant. 22 years old, playing in Australia for the very, very first time.
Most importantly, the game awareness. In Perth, in the first innings, he stood, waited, scored 41. We got to 150. In the second innings, when we needed quick runs, came the big hits. In Adelaide, again, he pushed late in the order, quickly got up to 40 plus with a tail. And he had runs in the second innings also, helping us cross the innings defeat line. And then that 14 in Brisbane, in some 70 balls, he just stood like a rock there. And here this 100. Exceptional mental awareness. This kid is not a flash in the pan. He is a serious batter to be recognized. Of course, he'll have his own challenges. When time comes through, people will find some chinks. They'll work on him, hopefully. Whoever runs this team will use him properly and not try to squeeze him into roles that he's not fit for.
Which brings you to Rocco. I personally don't see anything changing. The fact that they've lost this test is embarrassing. And the fact that Virat Kohli once again got out fishing outside the seventh stump is embarrassing. The fact that Rohit Sharma couldn't get into double digits one more time is embarrassing. But I suspect none of this will matter when the playing 11 for Sydney's announced, because they're both going to be there. Maybe something might happen after that. Who knows? But as far as retirement dramas are concerned, I think we are done. There won't be any more. Thoughts?
My view on this is very simple. Had we been down 1-3, both of them would have been dropped for the Sydney test. We are down 1-2 and we are still in the game for the BGT. Yeah. The WTC might be a little too far, but if we win Sydney, we retain the BGT. Let's face it, Sydney is going to be the most softest of the playing surfaces. And this could be a last hurrah for them. To me, I reckon that the plan all along for them was to leave after the cycle of the WTC, which might just be over after Sydney. They'll just walk away into the sunset. They've done a lot. They've won a lot of games for India. They've been brilliant. I think we need to celebrate their careers. And for their sake, I hope that they do well in Sydney. And that would be a very nice way to say goodbye. But they will not be dropped, because there is still an opportunity to get back the series. And it is not like Devdutt Padikkal, Dhruv Jurel or Sarfaraz Khan has shown anything that is very special. They have not broken down the door to suggest that these guys, they're going to be phenomenal. And neither has Shubman Gill for that matter. So it's not like they've got people knocking on their doors. Yeah, no, there are people who are saying Sarfaraz Khan didn't get a chance. Sarfaraz Khan had 6 innings in India against New Zealand. He scored 150 in one, a grand total of 21 remaining 5. On what basis are you supposed to be retaining him in the team? Devdutt Padikkal looked like a fish out of water. in the first test. It's not like Dhruv Jurel did something very special. Gill was unfortunate. But again, what has Gill done? He averages something like 25 outside Asia.
Yeah.
17 tests. So there are no runs to speak of. He averages less than people like Washi and Nitish.
Yeah.
And it's not that he brings anything else to the table. He's not a gun fielder. He's not a great bowler, nothing. So your alternatives are weak. On the other hand, if Rohit and Kohli come off, it's a completely different ballgame. Even for that short period of time, that 91 for six phase, Kohli was, for all practical purposes, running the shop at that point of time. Team looked electric. Anyway, that's my thoughts on these guys.
By the way, I'm starting to look at Sanjay Manjrekar as the Jim Cramer of cricket commentary. He's a contrarian pick. You know, he said Ravindra Jadeja is a bits and pieces player, and that was the break Jadeja needed in his life. He said Reddy should be dropped. He's now going after Washi, and his last suggestion is Hill should have played instead of Washi in this test. Pretty much everybody seems to be thinking that we should be reinforcing our batting. So what do you think is going to happen for the Sydney test? You think Gill is going to be back and we're going to drop Washi? Or the three all-rounders, I don't see them dropping Jadeja for Sydney. I don't see them drop Reddy for Sydney. Yeah. Washi is the easier scapegoat. Be unfortunate to reinforce our batting again.
Yeah, sounds like that to me. Because if there was one thing that was really clear coming out of this test, it is that Rohit Sharma still doesn't trust Washi's bowling skills completely. Travis Head bowled more overs than Washington did in this test. They will want to reinforce the batting. Ideally, I'd like to see the fourth pace bowler somehow getting squeezed in. So I would like to see Washi go out, probably Prasad come in. And if Siraj is tired, he can go out and Harshit can come back. But just play the fourth pacer. Play Nitish Reddy in the top six. He is a proper number six batter, or maybe even a proper number five batter. Tell him his job is to score big hundreds, not do some little bit with a ball, do some little bit with a bat. That is what I would hope would happen. I only want that one spinner in the squad at this point. I don't want two.
Yeah, Sydney has been a lot more seam-friendly than spin-friendly in the last 2 years. So one spinner kind of makes sense.
The fundamental issue here is Washi is not deemed an attacking bowler. And Rohit needed wickets in the second innings. Washi was not going to give him wickets. So his hope was Jadeja do something, which he normally doesn't do much in Sena conditions. Now, that second innings bowling phase is when I think the presence of Ashwin would have made a difference, because he would have been relentless in attacking them. So that's where we missed an attacking spinner. And I mean, that's
what Nathan Lyon did in the fourth innings, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, there was a very interesting comment. I don't know who made it, that the Indian playing 11 seemed to be more suited to bowling second. And in some ways, it is true, because Lyon was not getting anything from the wicket until the fourth innings.
So. Yeah. In fact, until the third session, literally.
Correct. And I do think Washi is going to get punished. He's going to get punished for his passive role in the second innings, his unwillingness to try to make things happen. And it didn't happen once or twice. It happened so many times. I do think they'll find some scapegoat and Washi is an easy target. They will forget about the fact that he actually held the innings together with a very solid 50 and he kept his wits about him. They probably will ease him out. And knowing the propensity of this particular team management, they'll bring in Gill and not a quick. Although I think the right thing to do is throw caution to the winds, bring in a quick, bring in Prasad Krishna and say, let's go for it. Or maybe the decision will be on the morning of the game. If they find that the wicket is looking green and a green top or thereabouts, then they might bring in the extra seamer. Otherwise, they just play Gill.
This Indian team has been thoroughly out-batted and out-bowled. I mean, even with the Jasprit Bumrah factor. So if they have to win, they have to be doing something disruptive here to win. If you don't have three fast bowlers called Cummins, Stark and Hazelwood, then you need to probably do something to cover.
I have a question. I can't remember the last time Bumrah played five tests in a row and Sydney is only 2 days away. I actually wonder if Bumrah will play a CG.
Great point. you know, in fact, during that second break, when Bumrah was actually batting, he was not looking pleased at all. You guys probably saw the pictures as well. Somebody brought in a message from this thing, and he was like, no, what should that effect? I think he was seriously annoyed at having been called out to bat, even to save the test. The fact that he didn't last long is a different topic. In terms of overs bowled, Cummins has bowled as many overs as he has. And Cummins has spent a lot of time with the bat in addition. So if Cummins can play the fifth test, so can Bumrah, in my opinion, and he probably will. He's not going to go to the management and say, rest me. That is for sure. And remember, if he breaks down after this test match, he doesn't get to play the Champions Trophy. That's the worst case scenario. He will still be fit for England.
I agree with you. He's at his peak. He's been brilliant. And why walk away for a game when you're in this kind of form? And again, coming back to that same old discussion about the BGT still being alive. There are two prizes there. One is the BGT and the other is the WTC final. Both of them are big. And to me, if they even retain the BGT, I think it'll be treated as a big win, even if they don't make it to the WTC final. And of course, there's a 7-month gap. I'm not so sure whether Bumrah is that very keen to go and do this Champions Trophy stuff anyway.
Yeah,
unless Roko are sent home, cross the board at the end of the series, and they go with a young squad for the CT. And since Hardik is not yet as a leader, and Sky is not fitting into the ODI team, they might ask Bumrah, hey, will you captain the team? Set the stage for Bumrah being the captain for the Patwardi Trophy also. What I think one disruptive thing this team can do is make whatever change you want. You don't want to make a change, that's fine. Just make Bumrah the captain for the last test.
That would be disruptive, yeah.
And just like that, the pressure on Rohit will decrease. Both of these, Roko will think of it as their last test. They'll go all out to succeed. Bumrah's, it's his test. He won one. And he can go back saying, hey, I captained two, we won two. This is like a really serious way to disrupt the whole setup there. Okay?
That would be interesting. Let's see.
And just tell him, you are going to be the captain of Team India and Test going forward.
Anyway, let's see how this goes. We will certainly be here to talk about what happened at Sydney after that test is done.
With that, it is a wrap for the year with the All Out for No Loss team. Thank you, everyone. Wishing everyone a very happy new year. And hopefully, we'll be getting together sometime early in January to celebrate a win at the Sydney Cricket Ground.
Thank you, everyone.
Bye.